Yeah, you have. The sounds of Mustard Courage with Karma here on Radio Australia. Very, very fast moving track there. And we do have Morris Misilowski and Adeline Ng rocking away to that track. They're also two of the most enthusiastic people when it comes to apps and smartphones and all that. Hey guys, moments ago, Hon Wing Chong was here in the studio talking about that app and stethoscope. Did either of you have a go at it?
Have a go at it.
Yeah, did you feel your hearts, you know, did you try it?
No, I didn't.
You're listening to your heart?
I don't care enough, but, you know, I don't think I've got pneumonia at this time. No concerns enough to test it. But
I guess
that was the whole point.
We should have given it a go.
I didn't even think about it.
So you're all sort of hovering and looking and talking to Hong and Chong out there. And
yeah.
I thought, oh, yeah, you'd have tried it out.
Yeah, no, we were talking geek and nerd stuff.
Oh, were you? Okay. Well, we're here to talk geek and nerd stuff, aren't we?
Well, yes. I don't like calling myself a nerd.
I was calling me a nerd, not you.
Absolutely. Morris Misilowski, of course, is business futurist who joins us weekly here for our regular technology segment here on Radio Australia. But we are going to talk applications, technology, and health.
Yeah, absolutely. It actually follows beautifully from what we were talking about before. What we're talking about is the realms of an aging society, which is something we're seeing right around the world, not only in Australia, but in Japan, in lots of places, and how some of that assisted living into the later years that we have will be done through technology.
Mm.
We know in Australia that we have an increasingly aged population and will have over the next 30 or 40 years. We know that there most probably will not be enough beds in nursing homes for them. Mm. And more importantly, there would be a strong desire for people not to be in nursing homes until a point at which time they have to be. Mm. So they'd want to live in their own environments. What we have also is a backdrop of people who will live longer than ever before.
Mm.
We know statistically that people will live most probably to about 90 or 100 quite comfortably.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the notion before that living to 80 when I was born, I'm a baby boomer, was really an unusual thing. And now it's quite common. And they live very healthy, very sprightly lives. Wouldn't want to take any of them on in a dark alley.
I mean, people start looking for the fountain of life and encapsulate that into a little pill.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Could go on forever.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about that as well. We'll do that another day, how long
That's
we might
so
live. Well, it's optimistic. In some ways, it's not, but let's keep going anyway. So we're talking about the notion of living at home, living far longer, far stronger lives, and how we might be able to do that. So people now, when we get down the track 5 years from now, 5-10 years from now, we're going to find that our homes will turn into ongoing monitoring devices if we want them to.
Yeah.
So what we'll be able to do, for instance, is to have a home that recognizes what our ailments are, what things we need to be doing, so what medicines we need to be taking, when we should be walking around, what time we get up, you know, when we should be going to the bathroom, all those things. It knows our routine, in other words, and it can help to monitor our well-being around the home. So it'll know if we're not doing something or if we've done something incorrectly, and it will then do the appropriate action. So, for instance, if we're meant to be awake and we haven't yet woken up, it'll do something like stir us. So what we're talking about, for instance, and we already can buy them, is a little application, a little thing that you put into your pillow or onto your mattress. And if it realizes that you haven't moved in a particular period of time that's been set by you or a doctor or by a caregiver, it'll actually give you a little buzz into the pillow or the mattress. In other words, it'll shake you just a little bit to make sure that you're still with us and that you're about to get up. If you walk around your home or your apartment or your flat, it'll actually be able to monitor how far you've walked and how well you've walked. So it'll again be able to make some kind of an assessment of how healthy you are in that. It'll be able to tell the tablets that you take, so literally whether you've taken your right prescriptions and when you've taken them, and be able to keep that as an ongoing record.
Mm.
When you go into your bathroom and you do your normal bathroom things, it'll be able to monitor that as well. So it'll be able to take your blood pressure, it'll be able to take urine tests, it'll be able to take stool tests, it'll be able to do all those things. So we're looking at an environment that will become very rich if you wanted to, rich in the way that it can provide information, ensure that your health is being taken care of, and then to feed that back to an army of professional people that ongoing will assess and work with you.
Okay. I just want to come in there and ask you, to what extent were there already? You mentioned a few things there, the mattress, the pillow, all that being programmed with stuff. I've just received a text message from, it's Paul in Port Moresby, who's saying here, ever since I bought my smartphone, it has everything. I send my email, I search the internet on this small device on the palm of my hand. I don't need a laptop. I love technology. A lot of us are already doing a little more with it, in that you mentioned the mattress there. People I know first thing they do when they wake up in the morning is check their emails while they're still in bed. The pattern, we're moving that way, aren't we? Feeding and interacting that closely with these devices.
Absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right. For many people, it's part of a daily routine. In fact, it's as daily routine as brushing their teeth or getting up and going to the bathroom. But we're talking about a cohort, a group of people who, for whatever reason, may be infirmed, may be elderly, really can't do this for themselves. So, yes, you're right. Society's becoming quite normal or normalized in using these technologies and having them around us.
But are we already moving on to the stage where the professionals, as you finished up moments ago talking, professionals are already feeding back to you via some of these devices?
It's starting. We're just starting to see the cusp of this. And you're absolutely right. And that's what we talked about in the previous segment, or you talked about in the previous segment as well, that we're just beginning to see this. It really hasn't started in a great way. We need a lot of professionals to take this on board as well, that there hasn't been a great uptake yet in doing that. We also need to put it into a context of usefulness too. The last thing we want as lay people is to be drowning in this type of medical information as well. You know, we have this wonderful term called cyberchondriacs. And cyberchondriacs are those people that self-diagnose themselves online, that go into the Googles and all those other spaces and type away, you know, the bumps and lumps that they've got.
Half the time they get it wrong, don't they?
It's more than half the time, and truly more than half the time, because what doctors are finding now is that people are more often coming in and telling them what's wrong than coming in with symptoms of, I don't feel well, but this is what I have. And many of my doctors...
Well, it doesn't help when I go to the pharmacy and ask him for some medication to treat something and say, well, I have got no clue, which has happened to me on more than one occasion.
So you're right. So absolutely, it has. It happened to all of us. So what we're talking about for me is getting to a place not too long down the track where the information that's being collected is useful, purposeful, being seen by people who know what to do with it, and it's being monitored as it might have been in an acute medical situation like a hospital. But we don't physically need that environment with all of the impost that's around it. And not just for the cost of the medical, but for the psychological cost of somebody being in a hospital or being in an aged care home when they really don't need to, with a bit of assistance they can be home, is really what I'm more on about, that ability to be able to live your own life as long as you're able to.
Morris, is this likely to also save governments who provide health services money as well in the long term after the initial investment into all of this?
I think absolutely. I think the return on investment has to be there. There's been some research done into it as well. If we can keep people in their own homes, if we can keep them healthy, robust, thinking and active, then there's certainly not an impost on the health system. So absolutely there is. We can also start to change the way that we offer medical assistance, because instead of it being centralized into one place, a hospital or a medical caregiver place, we can decentralize it. We can have people going out to people's homes, but we can also use technology for a lot of the things that we might go out for now. For instance, there's a trial being done right now in Melbourne with nurses. There are a group of nurses that spend all of their life in cars going to patients, and these are elderly patients who can't get to them. And what they do are basic tests, really just to make sure that they're still with us, that everything is okay. What they're able to do now in this trial is they're using something as simple as Skype. They've given iPads to a group of patients, and every day they contact them by Skype, and they have a Skype conversation with them.
Yeah.
What they're able to do is they're able, of course, to make sure the patient is still there, and the patients are told what to do. They have to hold up the tablets to show they've taken them. There's an assumption there, obviously, if they're missing that they're taken, that's an assumption. But they're able to keep contact. What's also happening in this that wasn't part of the trial is that the group of people who have these iPads have actually started up a network amongst themselves.
Okay.
And now they're Skyping and contacting and talking to each other.
Yeah.
So they've set up a virtual network.
Yeah.
Even though we would all love them to be out and about, the reality is they're too frail and not able to. We would love nurses to go there every day without doubt, but the facilities don't make that possible.
Yeah.
This is not the best, but this is a great alternative.
Yeah.
So the nurses are going twice a week. They're still physically saying, still physically getting there, but they're saying in between the physical, let's do some virtual stuff as well.
And Skype allows you to do the virtual stuff.
Absolutely.
See each other on screen free of charge as well. Just to explain to those who haven't quite caught up with the Skype thing.
And that's why it's imperative that we talk about things that are free like that, because these are things that can be used by everybody. You know, it's not an impossible thing if you have an elderly parent or somebody who needs care to use a free piece of equipment like Skype or something to keep in contact with them.
A lot of the grandparents are doing this already with grandchildren and the like, aren't they? So
well,
it's
exactly,
not like, you know, those who have access.
Leads us to this study that has just come out of the city of Melbourne, a survey that's been done, because it wanted to test the assumption that older people aren't very tech savvy and that the onslaught of technology is actually dividing the young people from the older generation. And what did that survey find?
The survey found, no surprise to me, the exact opposite. That in fact, what they considered to be the more mature or the elderly, which in this survey is over 65 and getting close to that by the day, I resent that, but never mind, is that they in fact are embracing technology and are loving it, because what it does is to make the world smaller for them, meaning that if they are not able to get out as often, if they are a bit infirmed or their health is not where it needs to be, that they can make contact with people constantly. They can do their banking online. And the survey shows that over 37% of 65 to 75-year-olds use social media of that age range, that 80% of them use it for banking. That in fact, many of them have seen it as the tool that lets them get out into society virtually if they can't do it physically. So it seems to come as a surprise to many people that that's the case, but I just can't understand why, when you meet people of this vintage, they are just so full of stories where the world has opened up for them, as you said before, that they're able to see their grandkids every day. They might not have seen them for years, literally, because they live somewhere else. They now can see them every day. They can do homework with them. They're able to connect up with their friends. There's a quick story where I was in an RSL club about 2 months ago. I just finished doing a presentation.
That's a club for ex-servicemen.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. And they have the pokies there. And what it was a Saturday afternoon. So, translation again. Saturday morning, and these two wonderful octogenarians, you know, blue rinse the whole thing, meaning they have blue hair and the rest of it, were sitting there, and one turns to the other one and says, "I must get your Facebook page so we can talk during the week." And I went up to them, and I had this conversation, and asked them why. And what they told me was, it was such a typical story, that they are both on the pension, they only come out on a Saturday morning. That's all the money they have and all the ability they have to get out of the house. The rest of the week is spent inside by themselves. They're both widowers. Widows. So what they were saying was that their entire life, except for Saturday, was really spent online. They were learning online, they were sharing online, they were talking to people online. Their world was really in that space. Is it the best thing? Most probably not. But is it better than looking at four walls consistently and not talking to anybody, not having access to the outside world?
Yes.
Which is what has been happening up until now. It has to. When you're in your own environment, you only have your own company every day, and that's all that you know.
Yeah, the only thing about it is smartphones, is these phones where we can, you know, put in our details, put in all sorts of information. As you get older, your fingers, you get arthritis, you get all sorts of things, right? And one of the measures of the success of these things will be whether or not the right information is being put into the devices. That's going to be a bit of a challenge, though, isn't it? I mean, I hold my phone to my ear, and I mute it accidentally because it's a touch phone. My ears are probably too big. But it's not like it's going to be just straightforward, is it, Maurice?
I actually think it's going to be fairly straightforward, because it depends on what we're using it for. A lot of the background information is going to be put in by health professionals. I mean, the world that I'm seeing with aged care, I do a lot of work around this, is the health professionals want to be the first port of call.
Yeah.
So they're going to set up these devices so that they are as intuitive as possible. Most of the devices I've seen do not require huge amounts of physical input.
Yeah.
In other words, it doesn't require somebody to type something. It requires them, in most cases, with things that I'm seeing on the horizon, just to do their normal daily activities, to walk around, to pick up their tablets, to eat, to open up fridges, to do all those kinds of things.
I'm just thinking of a very funny scenario at the moment. If I had to put in how many tablets I had to take, I can just imagine this going, and instead of pressing one, I'd press like 11111, and then you'd have these alarm bells ringing somewhere, and someone thought I'm somewhere thinks that I've overdosed or something.
It's not you. In these devices, though, it's not you putting in a number. What the device actually does is to recognise how many you've taken.
Yeah.
So it actually does the counting for you. So there is very, very little input required in any of this, because what you're saying is absolutely right, that if we have to rely on the patient themselves to put the information in, it's not so much that they won't put the right thing in, it's often they don't have the ability, meaning if they had they don't have the physical ability to be able to do it. So these devices need to be as appreciant as possible of what's happening around them, and they're mostly pushing towards using gesture, using voice, and just recognizing what's going on around and taking account of that.
There's one frontier that I'm really excited about, and that is the possibility of printing human parts.
Yes. Isn't it?
That's amazing.
Printing human parts.
Yeah, that's right. I just saw it in, how you can print even in 3D. I mean, I had it as a concept in my head because people were talking about it, but when I actually saw it on video how it was being done, it was amazing. It's just like this little box, the printer goes off, but something in 3D, three-dimensional, actually comes to fruition. Question I have, though, if you're printing human parts, I mean, it's supposed to be being put into your body to replace things like even arteries. But the body has a habit of rejecting things that it doesn't recognize as its own. So I'm still wondering how this is going to work out.
The rejection on these apparently, and we're all in prototype stage, is apparently very, very low, because what you're doing is to print the actual body that it came out of. So it's an exact replica
so
of what's
got. Cells.
Well, it uses your own cells. It uses your own cells to take the initial scope of it, and then then infuses your own cells or your own tissues into what's been created. So when it goes into the body, in fact, the body recognizes it as its own. What you were talking about briefly is, if you want to go onto YouTube or any other device, look up 3D printer artery. In the last 6 weeks, there has been a hospital that has printed. Think dot matrix, the old dot matrix where it used to lay down ink. Yeah. So it works like that. And they have printed in sucrose, which is a sugar format, the scaffolding for an artery. What they do then is they inject that scaffold, that sucrose scaffold, with blood, and then they dissolve the sucrose around it, which leaves a scaffolding that puts the artery together.
Morris, we may need to follow up on this, because I tell you what, even while Adeline's talking about it, printing art, I'm a little lost there. I think it's a good one to come back to.
Let's sometime. Do it.
Okay. Morris Veselowski, business features.
Blows your mind, doesn't it?
It does.
Oh, while you're
it blows my mind that you're understanding all of it, Adeline.